Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Isle of the Undead by C. L. Werner, narrated by Gareth Richards. This title from Aconite Books is also available as a trade paperback and ebook, and can be found wherever fine books are sold. Prologue. Yannick Hassel tucked the heft of his axe underneath his arm while he rummaged through the battered trunk. Clothes and keepsakes were tossed aside, adding to the debris that littered the room. He found his irritation mounting. Why did people hang on to such trash? Where was the good stuff? Yannick finally spotted a small silver necklace. The pendant was some clumsy portrait of a child carved in wood. Sentimental value rather than monetary worth. Still, at least the chain might catch someone's eye. He stuffed the necklace into the burlap sack hanging from his belt. It joined a far too meagre collection of loot. After all his years driving a coach between Singerva and Schweinhof, Yannick had expected better pickings at Fague's Inn. Angrily, he slammed the lid of the trunk and stove in its side with a kick of his boot. It would be just like that conniving innkeeper Fague to hide his money in some secret spider hole. Some dark corner it would take weeks to find. Yannick gave the trunk another kick. He hoped the innkeeper had died unpleasantly. From the condition of the place, it looked as though a considerable number of zombies had converged on it. Perhaps one of those piles of badly gnawed meat down in the wine cellar was all that remained of that swine Fague.
"What's all that noise?"
a voice growled from the doorway. Yannick spun around, axe at the ready. He relaxed only slightly when he recognized the speaker. Tall, scar-faced, and still wearing a blood-stained cloak. Graf had a compact hand crossbow clenched in one fist. Yannick winced when he noted that the weapon was aimed at him. As a coachman, he knew the deadly accuracy Graf possessed. He'd been the most notorious highwayman in the province. The very best partner to have for a spree of looting. Graf possessed few scruples, and sometimes the abandoned places they searched weren't as empty as they seemed. Living survivors or undead marauders, the highwayman would dispatch them by putting a bolt through their skull. "Just having a look around," Yannick told Graf. He jostled the bag drooping off his belt. "Pickings have been less than I expected." The coachman glanced around the shambles that had once been the innkeeper's bedroom. "I think someone's already been through here." Graf favoured him with a cold smile.
"Think again," he advised.
He nodded his head at the floor, indicating the rooms on the lower story.
"Found two walkers still prowling about in the kitchen. There was another one locked inside the pantry."
He had a smaller, similar sack to Yannick's pinned to his coat. With his free hand, he reached into it and withdrew a silver goblet. Yannick recalled that Fague brought the vessel out only when a noble stopped at the inn. Anyone familiar with the place would have known to look for it. "If someone got here first, they'd hardly have left that," Yannick agreed, a sour note in his voice. He gave Graf's report about zombies a brief thought. Maybe the previous looters were ambushed, caught out by a bigger pack of walkers than the ones you found. The highwayman replaced the goblet in his bag.
"Whatever happened, I'm sure they didn't leave this place. Either they locked themselves in somewhere and starved, or else the zombies got them. Whichever, any loot they found's still here someplace."
Yannick considered the problem, thinking back to all the times he'd brought passengers to Fague's to wait out the night before pressing on to their destination, to avoid meeting up with men like Graf on some dark road. The Black Plague had changed everything in the kingdom, making desperate allies of former enemies. "We might try the loft," Yannick said, gazing up at the ceiling. "Not much space up there, but if..." A loud crash from below ended further discussion. Both of the looters instantly snapped to high alert. The initial violent noise was followed by the clamour of splintering wood and heavy objects slamming to the ground. Yannick and Graf shared a frightened look. They knew what they were hearing was the barricade they'd raised to seal off the main doors being broken.
Zombies!
Yannick gasped. It was always a danger when searching a place that undead in the area would be drawn to them. No matter how careful and quiet the looters were, the zombies seemed to have an innate ability to sense when the living were around. Graf unlimbered the second crossbow he carried. With a weapon in each hand, he started back into the hallway.
We'd better go and see. There might only be a few.
Or there might be dozens, Yannick grumbled under his breath as he followed the highwayman. As he climbed down the stairs behind Graf, his eyes kept darting around, looking for some way to quickly leave the inn. Every door and window, however, was blocked up. Keeping things out also meant keeping things in.
Aren't you a pretty one?
Graf growled when he reached the bottom of the stairs. From over the highwayman's shoulder, Yannick saw the loathsome creature his partner had spotted. The thing was several yards away, shambling out from the doorway leading into the bar room. Its thinness was almost skeletal, and the wispy white cloth that was draped around it might as easily be a burial shroud as the remnant of a proper garment. Its face was shriveled down to a dried-out skull with a tattered pit where its nose should have been. Horrible eyes. Somehow both vacant and malevolent glared up at the men. There was an eerie green luminescence about the zombie, a slow glow that made the hair on Yannick's neck prickle with fright.
We need to run, Yannick urged his partner.
Graf ignored the coachman and aimed a crossbow at the necrotic creature.
It's only one of them. Show some spine.
He let loose the bolt and sent it speeding down into the zombie's forehead. Yannick had seen Graf destroy many zombies with such shots. This time, however, the results were far different. Both men watched in horror as the bolt simply glanced off the withered skull. With the spectral glow looking even more pronounced now, the undead continued its slow but murderous march toward the stairs. Beyond it, other equally hideous creatures shambled into view.
Caesar's shovel!
The highwayman cursed, invoking the sinister funerary goddess. He aimed the other crossbow and sent another shot at the advancing zombie. Again the bolt was deflected by the rotten skull, bouncing from the decayed flesh as if it had hit a block of granite. Graf tried to back away, spinning around when he found his way blocked by Yannick. Before he could shove the coachman aside, the glowing creature surged up onto the stairway, and its bony talons wrapped about the man's head, long nails ripping into the looter's face.
Get away from him!
Yannick raged as he saw the zombie gouge bloody furrows in his partner's cheeks. Without thinking, he sprang down and brought the edge of his axe cleaving through the air at the creature's head. The axe bounced back at him, repulsed by the glow exuding from the zombie. Taken by surprise, Yannick lost his grip on the weapon, and it went clattering down the steps. He pitched onto his back and drew his knife. The walker he'd attacked shoved Graf to one side, leaving him to tumble to the floor where the rest of the undead were waiting to tear the last spark of life from the mutilated highwayman. The zombie on the stairs glared at Yannick, its yellowed teeth bared in a menacing snarl. The coachman scrambled upward, pushing himself along the steps while keeping his eyes on the creature that slowly pursued him. As he neared the top of the stairs, Yannick noted that another figure had appeared in the room below, a grim shape arrayed in heavy black robes. The face that sneered up at him wasn't that of a zombie. For all its pallor, for all its predatory evil, it was yet the face of a living man. There was a sparkle of sadistic mirth in the wicked eyes when they met Yannick's gaze.
Don't be too hasty, the robed stranger said.
For a second, Yannick thought the man was speaking to him. Then he noticed the man's hand as it pointed at the walker on the stairs. That paleness of the stranger's face had at least a speck of life to it, but the grey calmness of the hand reeked of the grave. and it was pointing at the zombie closing in on the coachman.
"Let's see if he can hurt you with that knife," the stranger scoffed,
and in his tone Yannick heard his own doom pronounced. The necromancer waved his necrotic hand in a dismissive gesture.
"It will be amusing to watch him try."
Yannick slashed at the zombie as it reached for him. He managed to retain the blade after the spectral aura repulsed his blow. He made another futile swing. Then the walker was upon him. The coachman's last thought, before everything transformed into gnawing pain, was whether he and Graf would stay dead, or if their ragged remains would rise again to join the necromancer's retinue. Perhaps, Yannick wondered, the necromancer was scavenging the ruins looking for those he could work his loathsome sorcery upon. In his own profane way, maybe he was simply a looter too. Chapter 1. Alaric von Mertz felt a coldness around his heart as he gazed out across the desolate town. From the roof of Vasilescu's tower, the knight could see most of Singerva, or at least the ruins it had become. As far as he was aware, the only people still alive in the town were those who'd sought sanctuary in the wizard's stronghold. The rest of the population had either fled into the countryside or died. Or worse, though Singerva was dead, there was still movement in its rubble-strewn streets. Singly or in packs, mobs of zombies prowled the wasteland, shuffling along without wit or purpose, until some sound or flash of movement would agitate the malignancy that coursed through their rotten frames. However mindless they might appear, hatred of the living provided the undead with their motivating force and turned them into a relentless army of destruction. The knight walked slowly about the periphery of the rooftop garden, one hand trailing along the ledge that encompassed the perimeter. The other rested on the dragon-emblazoned pommel of the sword on his belt. The crest of von Mertz, repeated in black and crimson on the tattered surcoat he wore over his armour, a last link between himself and his noble heritage. The Black Plague had infected many parts of the kingdom, and hordes of the reanimated dead rampaged across entire duchies. Alaric wondered how many other towns had become like Singerva. Was there nowhere that was safe? Alaric shook his head. Safety? Perhaps that might be possible if the zombies were the only evil that beset the kingdom. But he knew the situation was far more dire. In this very tower he'd seen the proof. The wizard Vasilescu had revealed himself to be a necromancer, collaborating with others in profane cabals to control the undead and direct their onslaught. Vasilescu was dead, but his loathsome ally had escaped, Brunon Gogol, the villain who had brought death to Alaric's family and left his father's domain as lifeless as a tomb. A stir of motion caused Alaric to turn around, refocusing his thoughts on the present rather than the past. A slim, dark-haired woman, her vestments the night black brigandine of a witch-hunter, leaned against the ledge. She directed her sharp, hawk-like gaze downward at the great plaza that bordered the front half of the tower. "The fire continues to hold them," Helhen reported. She wagged a gloved finger at the scene below. Walking to Helhen, Alaric looked down into the plaza. It was a far from cheering vista. The streets of Singerva might still be haunted by packs of zombies, but the area around the tower fairly crawled with the undead. There had to be hundreds prowling around the stronghold, with more staggering in to join the necrotic throng from every alleyway and side street that opened onto the square. Some of the bodies in the plaza lay sprawled on the flagstones, returned to a true death by arrows from the tower's defenders. The real defence, however, was the one that had been implemented by Vasilescu himself, a wide moat that circled the structure. Pumps in the cellars below fed an alchemical mixture to the trench, creating a wall of fire that readily consumed the undead that marched into it. The fire holds, Alaric agreed. He focused on a bulky zombie, its tattered garb marking it as once a stevedore, and watched the creature lumber without hesitation into the flames. The brute's urge to slaughter the living was greater than any caution yet lingering in its brain, and it pitched forward into the trench without so much as a pained yell. From past experience, the knight knew how hard such brutish undead were to destroy. "The fire holds," he repeated, shaking his head. "But how long can we hold the fire?" Helhen gave the knight a grim look. "That's the question everyone in this tower keeps asking, even if they don't dare put it into words. You can see the fear etched into each face, the worry about how long this place will be safe." She sighed and gazed up into the overcast sky. "You know, there's a sect of mystics who believe they can draw prognostications from the shapes of clouds."
"We might make use of such augurs," Alaric commented. "That is, if the Order left any of them alive."
He knew it was a cruel thing to say, but however much he had come to respect and depend upon Helhen, he couldn't forget his distrust of the witch hunters as an organization. Many were overzealous fanatics, perfectly willing to hang a dozen innocuous practitioners of magic, just so long as the 13th to be executed was a genuine necromancer. The Black Plague had only increased his antipathy, for now there was no denying the extreme menace necromancers posed, a menace that perhaps justified the murder of innocents to expose the guilty. The idea that honour and chivalry were inadequate to the task of fighting such evil was a repugnant notion that offended everything Alaric believed in. "Even at our most indolent, the Order had better things to do than persecute such fakers," Helhen replied, choosing not to respond to the anger in Alaric's tone. After all they had been through, she had learned to differentiate between when something was intended to be personal and when it wasn't. She showed her lack of concern with a little laugh. "Just about now we could use one of those charlatans. He could tell everyone that a particular cloud is an auspicious omen and that the moat will stay lit for many years yet." The knight swept his gaze across the decayed throng in the plaza, at all the clawed hands reaching out toward the tower, and the gaping mouths waiting to sink teeth into living flesh.
"But how long will it really hold?"
"Halmal might have been able to tell us."
Helhen's voice dipped as she spoke of the wizard who'd helped them reach Zingerva, and who'd later died fighting against his former master, the treacherous Vasilescu. She set her hand against a satchel fastened to her belt. Alaric knew it contained one of the arcane tomes Halmal had saved from the Order's vaults, and which he'd entrusted her with protecting. Alaric bowed his head in respect to the dead. Halmal had sacrificed everything to fight the sorceress evil which had laid waste to Zingerva. In the end, his efforts had even overcome Helhen's prejudice against those who studied magic. It was largely due to the courage of fallen comrades like Halmal and Drauschlev that anyone survived Vasilescu's betrayal. Alaric felt his duty to protect the refugees within the tower to be as much a sacred trust as Helhen's regard for the books the wizard left in her custody. A hard glint entered his eyes as doubt gnawed at Alaric's mind. Was that the only reason he was determined to defend the tower? The knight's fingers traced the family crest on his sword's pommel, feeling the dragon and the lance transfixing its body. The noble line of von Mertz, of which he was all that remained. "These people look to me for leadership," Alaric told Helhen. "But can I say that I am worthy of that trust? Can I be trusted with such responsibility?"
Helhen rested her hand on the knight's shoulder. "You've done nothing to dishonor your duty. Many of us would be dead now if not for you."
Alaric pointed at the ruined tower.
"I could seek a way out of here. Find some place safer to lead these people."
He closed his eyes and an expression of anguish flitted over his features.
"But there's something inside me that doesn't even want to try. I want to stay here."
"Because you believe Gogol will come back," Helhen supplied. Necromancers aren't so obliging. When they escape, they keep running. If they didn't, then the Order wouldn't need so many witch hunters.
Things aren't the way they were, Alaric said. The king has no dominion here now. It is the undead that hold sway, perhaps over the entire province. Gogol doesn't need to hide.
Helhen had no assurances to counter that argument. Alaric could see it on her face. She knew he was right. The witch hunter looked relieved when she stared past him and saw they were no longer alone on the roof. Two others had arrived from below to relieve their watch. One was a short, spry little man with a genial visage, even if his eyes were a bit too cunning to encourage trust. The other was a hulking warrior with leathery green skin and long, wolfish fangs that jutted from his mouth. Thief and Orc, the pair formed part of the disparate company who'd wrested the tower away from Vasilescu.
"You smashed that gink's flipper,"
the Orc grunted, nodding to Alaric.
"De Pikerina gonna lamp in for the new rumpus."
The thief provided translation for the savage warrior. "Ratbag feels that since you mangled Golgol's arm, he won't be looking for another fight." Geiseric rubbed his wrist against the golden buttons on the coat he was wearing, a bit of finery that he'd lifted from Vasilescu's wardrobe. "I can't say I agree with him. We killed his master, ruined his plans, injured him. Gogol knows the threat we pose." He tapped his foot against the roof. "And he knows this tower, its strengths and its weaknesses. We can prepare for him to attack, make a fight of it," Alaric said.
"Gogol won't risk himself unless he feels certain of victory," Helhen cautioned. "Already we've seen the grotesque ways the Black Plague has preyed upon the land. We've seen the horrible abominations the necromancers have crafted for their purposes. There's no knowing what foul surprises Gogol might bring if he returns."
"When he returns," Alaric corrected her. "Gogol was driven by revenge to make my family his first target. Whatever else might be uncertain, you can be sure he won't rest until I'm dead too."
Geiseric shook his head.
"All the more reason why we can't stay. Gogol is sure to look for you here. That might suit your personal vendetta, but a lot of innocent people will get caught in the fray."
The thief jabbed his finger against his own chest. "Mostly I'm worried that I'll be one of them." Helhen pointed at the plaza below with its horde of zombies.
"If we did decide to leave, how could we?"
"The stumpy's bawling to Jack," Ratbag growled, his red eyes gleaming as he glanced at the steps leading back into the tower.
"Ursula has been working on a solution," Geiseric interrupted. Ursula was the other survivor of their company, a dwarf whose expertise was explosives and demolition. "She's been figuring out a mixture drawn off the moat's fuel, something that can be portable," he nodded as he warmed to the subject. "Could use it to clear a path through the plaza and get everyone out of Singerva." He cast a hopeful glance at Alaric. The knight could feel Geiseric silently pleading with him to accept the idea.
"We'd still have the problem of where to take everyone," Alaric reminded them. "Ratbag tells us that the Orc lands beyond the frontier are also suffering from the Black Plague."
"There's a lot of ground between here and there," Geiseric said. "Lot of places that might be a safer refuge."
He turned to the Orc. "Ratbag travelled a long way to get here and he saw several spots that could provide shelter."
"Even the rotters ain't shacking there," the Orc snarled,
his clawed fingers tightening about the grip of his scimitar. Helhen didn't need Geiseric to translate.
"I agree that any shelter Ratbag saw might be overwhelmed by now. We've no idea how far the Black Plague has spread, or if the necromancers are using spells to expand its reach even further."
She shifted her focus to Alaric.
"Even such a nebulous hope is less foolhardy than remaining here to await Gogol's pleasure."
"I wouldn't expect timidity from a witch hunter."
Alaric shook his head. He knew it was the wrong thing to say when he saw the warning gleam in Helhen's eyes.
"The Order hunts necromancers," she said. "It's important to confront them on our terms, not theirs. Staying here and waiting for Gogol to come back is reckless." Some of the sharpness left her expression.
I don't believe your honour will allow you to be reckless. Not with lives entrusted to you.
Alaric bowed his head in defeat. The urge toward revenge was fierce within him. Gogol had set a horde of zombies against the village of Mertz. His undead were the ones that broke through the defences of Castle von Mertz and slaughtered everyone inside. His father, his mother, sister and brother. Retainers who'd served the family so long that they'd become like family themselves. All of them massacred by the necromancer's minions. Some of them had risen again as zombies themselves. He thought of his father. His last memory of the Baron was when his corpse had come stalking toward him with the mindless animosity of a zombie. Yes, he had so many debts to collect from Gogol. Debts of wrath and vengeance. The urge for revenge was like a thunder hammering inside his heart. But the onerousness of his obligations to the survivors was stronger. How long does Ursula need to prepare enough of her mixture? He asked Geiseric. The question caught the thief off guard. It took him a moment to compose his thoughts. A week, maybe? Certainly not more than a month. Alaric turned and stared back out across the ruined town. A week or a month? Maybe Gogol would return before then. Maybe he wouldn't have to make the choice between what he desired and what duty wanted him to do. It's your watch, Alaric told Geiseric as he moved away from the ledge. He motioned for Halhen to follow him as he headed for the stairs. We'll spread word among the survivors. Tell them to be ready to leave. Almost reluctantly, Alaric put his decision into clear words. When Ursula is ready, we're leaving Singerva. The funerary chapel dedicated to Kiesa, mistress of tombs, nestled in the shadow of the wizard's tower. Like the treacherous Vasilescu, the priests of Kiesa had required close proximity to Singerva's old cemetery. The doleful tones of the chapel's bell were intended to reach even the most distant grave, to assure the dead beneath the headstones that they were not forgotten, and so keep them restful in their coffins. The black-robed figure who now stood in the bell tower expressed a sardonic grin as he considered the rituals of Kiesa's priesthood. Their sacred precautions had availed them nothing, for when the Black Plague swept over Singerva, the cemetery's dead stirred just as readily as any unburied corpse. Only the very oldest of the crypts and tombs remained intact, those places where the occupants had mouldered away until nothing was left except handfuls of dust. Everywhere else the fell magic awakened the dead and resurrected them as the undead. The common pits of paupers now stood as trenches, the soil churned by the bony claws of the things hidden in the ground. The marble tombs of the wealthy, for all the protective spells and orisons gold could buy, stood hollow and empty, silver-handled coffins reduced to splinters as their occupants emerged to new and unholy animation. Many of the dead, disgorged by the cemetery, now filled the plaza outside Vasilescu's tower. The man at the chapel took pleasure from the sight, for in it he saw a portent of the future. Struggle as they might, the living could never conquer the undead. They could only delay the inevitable. The zombies of the cemetery had spread across Singerva in a tide of massacre, most of their victims rising again themselves to swell the horde's ranks. Fight as they would, the living had either died or fled, abandoning the town to the children of the Black Plague. Now, in all the town, the only people left alive were those inside the tower, and himself. Mostly Brunon Gogol looked down at the ghastly arm hanging from the sleeve of his cassock. It was cold and numb, utterly without sensation. He had to concentrate on it to get it to move, and if he lost focus, the limb would stubbornly freeze into whatever attitude he had last demanded of it. 1,000 maledictions upon Alaric von Mertz and his comrades! Gogol's own arm had been mangled during their battle in Vasilescu's cellars. The necromancer had been compelled to amputate the ruined limb. He had decided to replace it with one cut from the shoulder of a zombie brute, selecting as his donor a brawny creature that had once served as a judicial swordsman.
an arm that could swing a greatsword with enough force to behead a condemned criminal, promised to make go-
Sample complete. Ready to continue?